here we go. Post All-Star Game, first edition of the podcast. I would say lucky number 10, round number. It's not our 10th podcast. We've had a lot of .5s along the way. But episode 10 here, the Phoenix Suns podcast. Fresh off of the All-Star break, literally moments fresh off of a win over the Portland Trail Blazers. And we have an ecstatic Jim Kokenauer, of course. He's going to go ahead and brag and boast for a minute. And you got myself, who didn't even really watch the All-Star game, but I know I lost pretty much everything we said last week in the predictions there. Jim, go ahead, take your victory lap, and let's go ahead and talk about the All-Star game and talk about how you're doing now that the Suns are back in action here tonight.
Okay, I think the way it broke down with our picks for the All-Star game festivities was that I had Ross in the dunk competition, which he won, and I had Lillard in the skills competition, which he won, and we both took the West, and they won. In the three-point competition, neither of us had a winner there.
I did pick the second-place guy, though. I had the Rocket, Matt Bonner.
Okay, so if we're going based off of, like, second place, third place, fourth place, first place, I think that I got you, like, about infinity to zero at this point.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I went with, that dunk contest. I actually went on the record on radio, like live radio, where people heard me say these things, saying that this could be a very good dunk contest, potentially one of the best we've seen in maybe 10 years, give or take. And those guys went out there and just flat out were abominable. I mean, I didn't watch it live. I DVR'd it, came back and kind of fast-forwarded through the highlights. And, I mean, it was brutal. Like, even my wife was watching, and she was getting bored. Like, she had no idea what was going on. She's like, why are they missing so much? And I was like, all right, it's time to change this up and watch some college basketball, because it was brutal. And I didn't catch any of the other events, but Kyrie Irving, the phantom of the skills challenge, wasn't actually out there, as I told Jared Dudley, but did go out there and win the three-point contest, had a nice showing in the rookie game as well, or Rising Stars game, and had a nice showing in the All-Star game as well. He had a pretty nice little weekend there for himself.
Yeah, so with my stuff, I guess that makes me a qualified expert at the completely irrelevant. And I like what you just pointed out there with Kyrie Irving. The weekend was kind of a little bit of a coming out with him. We spoke about that, and Kyrie Irving has kind of moved up the ranks in the NBA. He's on the cusp of being at the upper echelon of the NBA. And, you know, we just talked about it, that really if you were building a franchise, where would Kyrie Irving rank in? Pick any player in the NBA, and we were talking about him being maybe the third selection, actually, of any active player.
Yeah, and that's, I think the conversation obviously starts at three, because whichever order you want to put in, I think we're in inverse order. I say still today, if I'm giving someone a, just using this premise, if I'm giving someone a six-year max, and I'm picking, you know, to run my franchise, I'm still going LeBron over Kevin Durant, and I think you have the inverse of that, as we were talking about. But once you get past those two guys, and they're 1A and they're 1B, doesn't matter where you put them. At number three, it gets interesting because you have Dwight Howard, who's proven mentally and physically he's not up to par this season. You have Chris Paul, who's had his injuries in the past. You have Derrick Rose, who is injured right now, but is, I mean, you forget how amazing he is when he's not injured. You have Kyrie Irving. So, there's a lot of choices there. There's definitely a lot of people where you can go, who would you want to have run your franchise at this point? I don't really think that I would take anyone over Kyrie unless their names are Kevin Durant, Mr. Not Nice, or LeBron James. I just don't see how anyone in this league is even on that kid's level. He's only 20 years old, playing in the All-Star game in his second year in the NBA, has probably the best promotional marketing campaign going on with his Uncle Drew stuff, and he's arguably the best or second best point guard in terms of overall scoring and distributing the ball. It's pretty crazy that he's 20, you know, played 11 games in college and is a guy who in his second year in the NBA is being talked about as potentially the third best player in the league when you talk about potential.
Yeah, no, he has preternatural skills. He is just a complete stud at that position. And my biggest takeaway from the entire All-Star weekend, the greatest thing, was watching the prodigy Kyrie Irving, the precocious Kyrie Irving, in that one-on-one matchup with Brandon Knight. And he kind of broke his ankles on that first play, but they did a back-and-forth over several plays. And Kyrie Irving got the best of the entire thing. And Brandon Knight, he actually has some pretty, you know, good ball-handling skills himself. He displayed those, but he couldn't finish. And that's what I took away from that, was Kyrie Irving was doing the, you know, having the ball handling skills. He was showing that us. He was breaking ankles, and then he was finishing. And Brandon Knight was doing the same kind of things with the ball, but then he wasn't able to, you know, take that to its final commencement. And so you saw Kyrie Irving, like, a little bit of the strength that he has actually in a point guard matchup, and that really impressed me.
Yeah, and that's where, you know, as we've talked about before, you get those guys out of the draft. Where was Brandon Knight taken? Top 10. Where was Kyrie Irving taking? Number one overall. You look at those guys in the All-Star Rising Stars game, and outside of Kawhi Leonard, who went 15, who easily could have gone top 5 to 10, and Kenneth Faried, who Alvin Gentry was lobbying for to take at 13, you know, he was taken in the 20s. Those are the only two guys that weren't really, you know, top 5, top 10 guys that had a really nice showing and were invited to that contest. So when you look at things from that scope to bring it back to a Suns perspective, you the draft is important. You know, winning games is important, and improving and progressing is important as a team, but nothing is more important than adding the talent to the roster, because no matter who's the coach, who's the front office, who's the, you know, this, who's the that, it's about the players on the court. And with the current roster they have, they've proven that they are a bottom five team in the league, which means that they need to start building up through the draft. We'll get into the trade rumors here in a minute, but, you know, just watching the Rising Stars game makes you go, man, the Suns had nobody in that game. Suns had nobody at All-Star Weekend in general, but they had nobody in that game in particular, and they've been drafting in the top 15 over the past 4 years. You know, they had Earl Clark and Robin Lopez, and, you know, now they have Markieff Morris and Kendall Marshall. You have all these picks, and Markieff was in the game last year, but he had nobody in that game this year, which means that they need to either draft higher, because clearly they can't get top-level talent in the middle like some teams can, or, you know, they need to get themselves higher up in the draft and really take the scouting stuff seriously, because going forward, when you're a bottom five team, you better be hitting these picks or you become the Charlotte Bobcats, who can't buy a win for their entire existence.
Oh, absolutely. If you're one of the worst couple teams in the league and you're not involved in All-Star Weekend in the Rising Stars game, then that is deep, deep trouble, because that, you know, is a way for a team to actually be able to participate in the All-Star Weekend that isn't quite there. You need that young talent. You need to be involved in that. And a team like the Suns, with their draft picks, they should be vetting through the college ranks, getting that talent. And to this point, you know, with the high lottery picks, they haven't been able to accumulate any types of assets that could be in a game like that. But moving forward, I mean, that's where they need to be. They need to be looking at the players in All-Star Weekend, and that should be their goal, to acquire those types of players.
Yeah, and now when you look at it, I would say that there's 29 games left in the season, and, you know, going forward, what is this team going to look like for the final 29? But it's 28 now. They just wrapped up against Portland, again, to show you that dedication that Jim talked about a few podcasts ago. We're recording this after the Portland game is over to be able to give you that scope and knowledge on what happened in that game. And I watched, you know, for the most part, the game. You watched kind of the end of it there as it got close down the stretch. But it was a game where it looked like Portland left their defense in Houston for All-Star Weekend. Damian Lillard didn't really come out until late. Goran Dragic went out there and had a career high with, I believe he finished with 18 assists. Correct me if I'm wrong when you come up here. But, you know, a game where the Suns were just on fire offensively in the first half, kind of, you know, faded away a little bit in the third and the fourth quarter, letting Portland get back in the game. But, you know, another win. It doesn't really dramatically change their standings. They still sit currently locked into that fifth spot if the lottery balls were dropping today. Sacramento still got a full game, or a half game on them, rather, and they still got a little bit to go before they catch a Cleveland or a Washington. They're going to have to run off like 7, 8, 9 losses and lose their head-to-heads to teams like Washington to be able to catch them. But if you look at it, teams like Charlotte, Orlando, not Washington really, but definitely Charlotte and Orlando, teams like New Orleans, it feels like in Minnesota, they're in full just we're done mode. You know, we're not really trying. If guys are hurt, we're going to leave them on the IR the rest of the year. And the Suns are one of those teams, along with Washington, and you can even consider Cleveland a little bit, where those teams are actually trying to win games, or they're at least trying to compete in all these games. So, you know, in order to rise up the rankings and the lottery balls, you got to lose some games, and they went out there and won one tonight. Doesn't really affect them dramatically, but it does, it, you know, in the long term, in the grand scheme of things, it might affect their draft status.
Yeah, where they're at still is where they have been. And, you know, it's a situation of false hope versus reality. It's a situation of future planning versus instant gratification. And really, the Suns need to lose these games. The other teams that are in the same category with them, like you said, the teams that are moving up are like teams like Cleveland and Washington, and they have guys like Kyrie Irving and John Wall. These teams are building towards something. The Suns are in a lost season, and maybe we'll talk about this a little bit more moving forward with a couple of second-half predictions, some stuff like that. The front office and all the way up to Robert Sarver at this point, they need to take a good look at this and say that, you know, there's no reason in cutting off their nose to spite their face. There's no reason for these Pyrrhic victories, that they need to do something at this trade deadline to future plan, to acquire young assets and picks, to maybe gut the roster. Let's use that word. Let's cannibalize it. Who cares? Let's be as mean as we want to about it. But to put ourselves in a better position moving forward. And that's the smart thing. That's the prudent thing to do at this point. So hopefully that's what we'll get.
Yeah, and when you look at it, you know, to kind of segue into all the talk has been, I mean, it's all about the Suns. I mean, every single trade rumor, they were in it for Rudy Gay. They were in it for James Harden. They were in it, so to speak, for Josh Smith, Iman Shumpert, you name it. The Suns were apparently involved in the trade talks to get that player. And it looks like now, as I said, that literally the day that the trade happened, I talked to a source of the Suns and they said, yep, false, but, you know, just let them say what they want to say out there in the public, but it's false. And so the Josh Smith stuff, he's a guy where, I mean, are you going to give a guy like him a max contract after trading some guys that are potential future assets for your team? Probably not, and that's what he wants. So the Suns, I mean, they're smart to step away from that. If you're the Suns, you don't want to necessarily go in and just head over heels jump into a guy like Eric Gordon like they had in the past, or a guy like Josh Smith like they're doing now. You probably want to go in with the mentality, as I wrote today, being the vulture. Just go in there and collect assets. Or if a trade comes and you get knocked off your feet for a guy who's going to be a franchise changer or someone you can build around, great, go and get that guy. But those guys have already been traded. James Harden already has a home. Chris Paul has a home. Dwight Howard has a home. All those guys are where they are right now and where they're probably going to be for a while. So, I mean, at this point, you just need to collect more assets. The assets you collected this summer didn't necessarily pan out. Other teams don't really want them. So maybe it's time to maybe put a few of those together, go get some new assets, build through the draft this summer. So, you know, in terms of the trade rumors, I don't know what's going to come to fruition for the Suns. I mean, the trade deadline is technically tomorrow at 3 o'clock Eastern, which is about 1 o'clock out here in Arizona. So, you know, by the time this podcast goes up on Wednesday, there's going to be a little over 24 hours for trade chatter. It's going to be right about the 30-hour mark of trade chatter. And, you know, maybe something happens for the Suns. I don't see it unless New York caves in on the Iman Shumpert stuff. But it seems like he's got plenty of other suitors. I'm sure that there's about 29 other teams in the NBA that wouldn't mind grabbing Iman Shumpert.
Yeah, I mean, the obstacles facing the Suns aren't insuperable. They aren't insurmountable. But I'm going to be really disappointed if we have the status quo at the trade deadline. I'd be even more disappointed if they made a trade that was actually geared towards improving this season, because that's just ridiculous at this point. But really, the goal should be, like we've talked about, draft picks, prospects, losing games moving forward. So that's what I'd like to see coming up over the next couple of days, and we'll see where it actually happens, what plays out.
Yeah, we'll see with that. I mean, all the rumors are rumors or speculation. Until Adrian Wojnarowski speaks, nothing has happened. You know, there's a lot of guys out there that are good reporters, but just when that guy speaks, it's word is bond. That guy's got it locked in. So he hasn't said anything. You know, I haven't heard anything on my end in terms of stuff that's like coming down the pipeline and going to happen. I mean, the Iman Shumpert stuff, there's some potential there. Teams are going to be looking for the services of a guy like Sebastian Telfair to be their backup and come in and play out the season and see if maybe he's worth bringing back. So you might see some contenders or some fringe contenders. I guess Toronto is one of those that are considering looking at a guy like Sebastian Telfair. And hey, if you can get a late first round pick for Sebastian Telfair, I mean, that's you knocked it out of the park, home run, while scoring a goal in overtime of game 7 of the Stanley Cup. I mean, if you can get a first rounder for him, great. Love you, Bassey, but you know, it's time to move on and collect an asset. More than likely going to be a second round pick, but guys like Jermaine O'Neal, Jared Dudley, Marcin Gortat, Sebastian Telfair, I would not be shocked if all four of them are gone. And as much as to your dismay, I wouldn't be shocked if all four of them are still here and the Suns end up standing pat, because it feels like there's a lot of action in terms of like the chatter and the pre-work, but they don't actually execute the final move down the stretch. It happened with Eric Gordon. Seems to happen a lot of times with a lot of these moves that get talked about a lot. And I don't know if these guys are gun-shy or if the trades just didn't come to fruition. It was more rumor than actual reality. But it just feels like at the end of the day, when it comes time to actually make the move just doesn't end up happening for the Suns for a multitude of reasons over the past couple of years. And you know, I would not be shocked if we are talking, you know, next week and there's no moves have been made, we're status quo, and we're looking down the barrel of the final 25 or 26 games to kind of see what the Suns can do with the same roster and this coaching staff.
Yeah, so to be terse, concise with it, what a great man once said that I like to use sticks in my craw, just like our friend Lon Babby likes to use a lot of these quotes, aphorisms, apothems, is never confuse activity with achievement. And so we'll see if the Suns actually achieve anything or whether they just have their names and all these circuses, all this activity, and don't actually get anything done as a result of it, whether they're just newsworthy or whether they actually make news. So
yeah.
I think moving forward past that, though, so we got the trade deadline, and who knows what could happen. Anything could, like, fulminate at any point. We could have explosions. We could have breaking news here in the middle of the night, or everything could quietly pass. And so what is the rest of the Sun season going to look like past this point, depending on what happens with this trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, it's like you said, trades are not – when you look at it, let's just – whether they stay status quo, whether they bring in Iman Shumpert, whether they bring in Josh Smith, you're still losing players, so they're basically replacing production. I don't really see the Suns being amazingly better or worse, whether a trade happens or not, to be honest. I think they kind of are what they are. They're a team that's going to be playing, you know, win one, lose four, you know, win one, lose two. It's going to be that kind of a season to the end, no matter what. And, I mean, just looking at the rest of the schedule, they have 28 games. They just won one against Portland. Just digging through the schedule, it's not the easiest schedule in the world, especially when you start looking at April, when teams are either gearing up for the playoffs or battling for position. They're playing a lot of teams in April specifically that are going to be battling for playoff positioning when all things are said and done. You got games against Houston and Denver. You got games against teams that are going to be scrapping it out for the playoffs in the month of April. They got the Clippers, the Warriors, the Rockets twice, even the Mavericks to an extent, they might be in it at that point. And then you have the Denver Nuggets to end it out. Even at the end of the month before that in May, you have teams like Indiana and Utah and Brooklyn at the very end of the month. So the final stretch of about 10 to 12 games, I think, could be brutal to the point where the Suns win maybe one or two games. Because it's that brutal where these teams are going to be battling it out. I mean, look at Golden State. At one point, they were around the league, people thought they could be the 3 seed in the West. And now they've slipped all the way down to the point where Houston and Utah and Golden State are battling it out for who's going to be 6 through 8. So, you know, a team like Golden State will definitely be looking for wins at the end of the year. I'm looking at it, and coming into this game, I found 8 wins in the final 28 games, and then they won against Portland tonight here. So, looking at it right now, their current record, when you're looking at the standings, is that they are 18-36. I see this team finishing up the season with, I'm just going to say, 25 wins. So it'll probably end up being, if we're going to average it out, somewhere between 25 and 28 wins. I'm going to go with, unfortunately, a 25-win season for the Phoenix Suns.
Yeah, I believe the franchise record was 66, and I think the second most was only 54. Yeah, in terms of losses. So I think that the Suns will beat that. I don't see where they have enough wins left to be able to top that number to get to 28. So I don't see that. If I had to bet, I would say 26. 26 was what I would put my money on the roulette table.
Yeah. I mean, at this point, if you look at it, you're right. I mean, the inaugural season was 16-66. You can't really, I mean, that's a season where I don't even count it because it was the inaugural season. So, I mean, technically, that's their worst season ever. But 87-88 with the whole drug scandal, trade away the roster, bring in a bunch of new guys. And at that point, that was amazing for the team, because that whole epidemic that happened with the roster where they had to trade everybody in the late 80s turned into bringing in guys like Eddie Johnson and Dan Marley and Kevin Johnson and Tyrone Corbin and Mark West, etc. Ended up bringing in basically the core that would eventually surround Charles Barkley and go to the NBA Finals just a few short years later. So, I mean, I'm not saying that we need another cocaine epidemic in the NBA to where the Phoenix Suns can revamp their roster, but it would be nice if something in the sense of urgency at least was there, where the guys that are running this team had a sense of urgency, like they had to get better tomorrow and were able to turn around the roster and get better. But I think you're right. I think from a futility standpoint, at the very best, this is going to be tied for the second worst team in Phoenix Suns history. And at the, you know, the very worst, they're going to officially be the second worst team in Phoenix Suns history record-wise.
Yeah, I mean, that's okay, though. If that's what we need to improve, if we need something embarrassingly disastrous, you know, a complete maelstrom to absorb this whole team, and then we can steer right out of that, out of the storm into the clear, placid waters, then I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, Charlotte, Washington, Cleveland, you know, all the teams at the bottom have gone through these situations before. Teams that are at the top of the draft, I mean, San Antonio was bad at least once to get Tim Duncan, and they've been amazing since. But Oklahoma City, when they were with Seattle, weren't great every year. You know, Miami was terrible to get Wade, and then terrible again to get the Beasley pick, which manifested itself into the big three. I mean, these teams, you got to get bad to get good. The Clippers have been terrible for forever. I mean, this is a season where it's like karma is paying itself off a millionfold. I mean, this might be the year they win a championship with how bad they've been for 30 years. So you got to get bad to get good. Every team at the top at some point in time this past decade outside of the Spurs was bad. I mean, you just look at it. Every single team in the top 10 of the NBA standings was at one point in time terrible, right around bottom five of the NBA sometime this past decade. So this is the Suns' opportunity to get bad, collect talent, and eventually, you know, cream rises to the top. Eventually they can rise themselves right back up.
Yeah, and you dip your toes into that pool, and you just kind of wade in. You don't jump in head first. You don't meet catastrophic failure that way. You just kind of, you can jump in, you can jump out, you can skip in, you can skip out, but you don't want to, you don't want to get stuck there. And so that's where the Suns are at. And in terms of not getting stuck there, not in terms of jumping in head first, of doing the more cautious approach and jumping in feet first, testing the waters, we also have that Lakers pick that is on the horizon for us that has the potential to fall in our laps to help us with our team building this year.
Yeah, and we were talking about that before we jumped on and started here, is that the irony of tonight's game. So you beat Portland, which, you know, good job, you got the win, but you beat Portland, who is ironically a team that you kind of want to have continue winning games, whether, you know, the Lakers, whether they put it all together and they make the playoffs, that's kind of up to them. But at least in the short term, the stuff you can control, Portland was the only team ahead of them, you know, in terms of the lottery. So now with this loss, they slip into an exact tie. They're 1-1 against each other. They have the exact same record. And ironically, they play each other this week on Friday. So you know, if and when the Lakers beat them on Friday, they'll lock themselves into 14. I don't think the Lakers are going to move lower than 14 at this point. I think Portland had their nice rise. Now the book is out on them, and teams know how to beat them because they're very young and they're very limited in their depth. So teams know how to beat them. I think Portland's going to eventually go lower and lower in the standings. I think that they're at their best right now, and they're just going to go down from here. And the Lakers are either locked into that 14 spot, unless Utah, Houston, or Golden State, for that matter, unless one of those three teams decides to fall apart, all three of those teams are in the driver's seat. I mean, it's going to be really, really hard for the Lakers to catch them with the way that the Lakers are playing right now. They're four games under 500. All of those teams are currently at least four games over 500. When you look at Houston, currently right now sitting at 29 and 26, so they're three games over. But Utah and Golden State, seven games over each, respectively. So, I mean, they're all in the driver's seat. Houston just has to play above 500 ball to keep themselves there and give the Suns a second lottery pick.
Yeah, Golden State's the team that's starting to scare me a little bit there. They've lost six in a row, and they were completely out of the discussion. They weren't even a part of this until that losing streak. And now you have Houston, who's only a couple games ahead of the Lakers, 3.5. And now you've got Golden State that's slowly drifting backwards. And if they don't steer the ship in the right direction. Lakers do have a pretty easy schedule coming up here in March, to where, you know, we need these teams to stay above 500, play above 500 basketball, because if they drop to 500, then the Lakers are going to catch them, because I still think the Lakers are going to get up to that mark. So,
well, and here's one caveat to that. Is that as easy as the Lakers' schedule is, I think Golden State is hitting they peaked, they're falling down, and I think that they can right the ship and play at least 500 ball the rest of the way. I think they're good enough to do that, and part of that that'll help is that they face the Phoenix Suns twice before the end of the season. But with Houston, there's four games against the Phoenix Suns, and I'm not sitting here saying that Lance Blanks and Lon Babby and Lindsey Hunter are going to get together and go, so that's the game we play, you know, Luke Zeller and Wes Johnson the whole game, right? That's the game Deontay Garrett's going to start. You know, they're not going to do that, but that's four games against Houston, and they're all a little bit later on down the road in the schedule. They're not tomorrow. You know, they're all towards the beginning of March, middle of March, and then the other ones are at the end of the season in April. So that's four games right there where the Houston Rockets right now have 29 wins. Well, I'm not saying that those are all gifts and that Houston's going to dominate them, but that's potentially four wins the Suns can give Houston that they can't give the Lakers. So that's one little caveat for Houston in their favor, and I don't think Houston falls apart unless Mark Jackson just goes bonkers and just forgets how to, you know, the game of basketball is played and that team just forgets how to score. I think they can at least, you know, right this ship and be an above 500 team for the rest of the season. That Houston stuff is interesting, though, because they have four games against the Suns to close it out, and they don't exactly have a hard schedule to finish it up. I think they actually have a very manageable schedule where above 500 is something that's pretty realistic for them.
Yeah, call me the cynic, the eternal cynic, Chris, but I think if it came down to it the last day of the season and the Suns, all they had to do was lose a game and the Lakers would be out of the playoffs, they'd probably find a way to win that to screw themselves out of the pick. And, you know, obviously, that's just my personal viewpoint on the way they kind of have been dealing with stuff lately. But unfortunately, you know, the negative side of me still sees a very, at least, fighting chance that the Lakers are still going to rise from where they're at, which is really only, you know, the ninth seed up into that playoff fray, that they're actually going to be at least involved in that melee coming down the stretch. So at least it gives us something to keep an eye on, though.
Yeah, and I think it'll be interesting because, you know, they are, you know, like I said, they're four games under 500. They're playing Portland here soon, so I'm not saying it's a gimme win, but, you know, Portland's probably, to an extent, they're younger, so they're probably going to be looking at that game going, oh boy, the Lakers are coming to town. They've caught us. You know, we're not five games over 500 like we were. We're losing now. So, you know, with the Lakers, though, they have Boston before that game. They play them tomorrow on a back-to-back. Maybe Boston can knock them off there. I mean, their schedule coming up immediately is not amazingly easy, you know, at Dallas and at Denver in a back-to-back scenario. They have the Atlanta Hawks at home before they head out to Oklahoma City. So in spot duty, there's losable games, but you're right. I mean, down the stretch, it's not like their schedule is amazingly hard. You know, Houston has a chance to get a win against them. They have one more game head-to-head against each other. So I think that it's a situation where they're four games under 500. I think Houston and Phoenix are in control of everything, though. I think Houston, unless they decide to completely fall apart, they're in control of their destiny. The Suns, unless they decide to just start winning games, they're in control of their destiny. I think their talent level is going to limit them from winning as much as they probably can, but, you know, they're in control of their destiny. I think Phoenix is firmly locked, unless the lottery balls bounce the other way. I think they're firmly locked into a top five pick. And I think the Lakers are locked up into that 14 spot. It's pretty rare to see a team move from 14 even to 13 when the lottery balls bounce. So I think the Suns, when all things are said and done, are going to be drafting somewhere between 1 and 5. They'll be drafting at 14 and, you know, potentially adding two role players, two rotational players at the absolute worst to their roster when all things are said and done after this season. It's at least you have that to look forward to, is that you may not be looking forward to the games, but, you know, you can be looking forward to the draft and the prospects and the fact that there's a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel this year.
Yeah, and if they end up with that scenario, then maybe that gives me a chance to make a little bit of a vote of confidence for the front office, at least with Lon Babby, because if he actually has plenipotentiary power over the situation and the Suns are fully invested in his vision, then, you know, as long as they don't screw this up and do something that compromises that route that you said, then I'm not in a position where I'd want to be headhunting. So I think that's the most prudent approach. I think that's the best approach they can take. I think they need to take their lumps, and I think if they do so, that this rebuilding process will come up quicker rather than later. So I'm on board with that. Now, if we look at some of the games coming up this week, we have the one we just touched on, the Golden State game on Wednesday, tomorrow, today, when you're listening. And that's one that we obviously both want them to lose, right, Chris?
Well, that's a game where I think you're losing six in a row. They lost again tonight, right? So that gave them their sixth loss in a row. I mean, you're at home. You got a losing team coming in. Trade deadline right around the corner. I think there's got to be a lot of motivation. Look, if the Suns make a move, they're not going to get their guy to Golden State in uniform in time, so they're going to be playing shorthanded. And I think Golden State's way too motivated to lose that game. I'd be leaning towards Golden State in that game, no matter the scenario, trades or no trades.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that that Golden State will take that. We got Boston and San Antonio to finish out the rest of the week. I guess Minnesota would be on Tuesday when we would be recording the next one, although that one's at 7 o'clock here local time, so we might be getting on when it's done. Home games, Boston, San Antonio. I think the Suns can split those possibly. So the team's not going to do very good from this point moving forward. I have to say they win at least one of those four games, though.
Yeah, I would lean towards Minnesota being that win because Minnesota is just full-on invested in this draft. I mean, they're just full-on just done. They're not playing a good brand of basketball after being above 500 not that long ago to the point where they've lost, a lot of games in their last 20. They went from an above 500 team to just one of the bottom eight teams in the league just overnight, it feels like. But with the Boston game, I mean, they're going to be coming after they play in Golden State on Wednesday tonight. They come home for an off day on Thursday because they don't play or they don't practice on back-to-backs. And then, you know, Boston comes into town here without Rajon Rondo. But again, another team that's motivated with a trade deadline. They're clinging on and playing well to the final spot or one of the final spots in the East. I would see that one going Boston's way. I mean, we don't traditionally beat Boston. So that'll be a game that I'd be interested to watch. I think that game will be a lot closer than maybe a lot of people would think. It'll be kind of a dogfight since they're without Rondo. And then San Antonio, that has all the makings for a 25-30-point romp and seeing a lot of reserves for San Antonio coming into that game just because they're playing at such a high level. And San Antonio's not one of those teams that goes, oh, it's Phoenix? Okay, we'll kind of give a B effort. Whoever's on the court's giving an A effort every single time, so we'll see how that works.
Yeah, so, you know, lots of action moving forward. When we release this, there could be a lot of big moves. It could be very tumultuous coming up after this, or it could be pretty quiet. We have no way of knowing at this time. The next 2 days should be hopefully at least somewhat eventful league-wide and maybe on a personal scale for the Suns. And then once we move past that point and the dust settles, hopefully we can have a luminary on here whose eminence trumps that of Chris and I, and they can maybe hopefully kind of break down everything that we probably missed that fell through the cracks regarding this trade deadline situation.
Yeah, we'll definitely be fishing out there to maybe get someone on. So look out for a potential 10.5 going up either late Thursday or early on Friday to kind of recap the trade deadline and maybe get a little bit of a insight from the team itself. But, you know, if we don't get anyone for there, we'll be back definitely next week on Tuesday. By then we'll either have a brand new roster, potentially four straight losses, you know, maybe four straight wins, who knows? I mean, they just beat Portland tonight in a game that probably you and I wouldn't have bet our houses on, but probably would have leaned towards Portland in that game. So, you know, we'll be back next week for sure. Maybe back at the end of the week here to talk about some potential trades. So keep an eye out on the trade wire. Check out Bright Side of the Sun. We've been dominating the coverage in terms of what's going on with the rumors and everything. So you can always keep yourself up to date on there.
Things are going to change. I can feel it.
See, that change that you just said right there, that didn't inspire me like in 2008 when we were talking about change with the presidential elections. That was just like a begrudging, oh, we're going to be having some change here.
You know, blank happens.
Wait, blank happens or Lance blanks happens? Don't answer that, Jim. All right, guys, we'll talk to you next week.